When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome everyone to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
I'm BJ.
And BJ is back, first and foremost, so that's good. Yay, we're glad you're back.
Yay.
And this week is a little bit of a different episode because, unfortunately, Akira Toriyama passed away last week, and as anybody listening to this podcast probably knows, I mean, he designed all these characters, these monsters, Dragon Ball, Blue Dragon, Chrono Trigger. I mean, just so many things, such a massive creator. And so we wanted to kind of do a special episode to, I guess, like send him off in the right way, I guess is how you put it, like celebration of life kind of thing, because it is a very, it's a very sad thing and a very, you know, disappointing, disheartening, like heartbreaking thing. But he also like lived this very full life. And I think I've always kind of been one of those people that would rather like celebrate that aspect of it rather than just being sad, if that makes sense.
I get it. Yeah. It's something that like I was like super bummed when I saw it. Like I saw it one night when it was, when the news was released, and I had texted you immediately like, oh my God, no. And like Jennifer had heard me Jennifer had heard me and I saw it and I was like, no, oh no. Like that. And she was like, she really got worried that something was wrong. And so when I told her it, she was like, oh honey, I'm so sorry. Like it was a like real like emotional thing. I was like, of all people, like this is one I never actually considered, like that he was getting older and that he would we would end up losing Akira Toriyama anytime soon. As far as, you know, we're obviously not hit like his family is or anything, but as like major fans of his work who have dedicated at least part of our lives to something that he's created, it's like, wow, that's a real punch in the gut.
Yeah. And I actually woke up that day to that text from you, by the way. So I started my entire day.
Oh, really?
I started my entire day with that. Yeah. That's how I woke up and I was in bed. I was checking to, you know, see what time it was, see if I was supposed to get up or not. And I keep my phone on silent, you know, at nighttime. And so I went to check the time. I just had that text from you and I was like, what, you know, and had to go read it and everything. And yeah, it was a very sad thing. Really, I don't want to make this episode about me, but really did mess me up like Friday when I was trying to work, because my office is basically just like a little shrine to Akira Toriyama. like,
yeah, it is. It really is.
Like I have plushes of monsters from Dragon Quest that he's designed. I have Dragon Quest figures right here on my desk, like in front of me, like right in eye line, you know, above my computer. I have posters of Dragon Quest like 3 and 11 in here. I have, you know, all these figures. There's the Dragon Ball manga like all lined up in rows on the bookcase right here. There's Sandland over there. There's all the Dragon Quest games on like every system from like Famicom up through like 3DS and PS4, all of those things just showing like all over the place. And you have like Blue Dragon and everything over there for like 360 and the DS ones, and like all of this stuff is in here, like Chrono Trigger, Super Famicom box is like right here. Like there's just all these things. And so it really is, it's like it's literally impossible to look around this room and not see something that Akira Toriyama created. And so it's just which I think really speaks to like what a great like creative person he was, because there's not many things in this world that I love so much that I would just surround myself with that kind of art, you know?
Yeah, that's like, I've recognized that being in your house, seeing all that stuff, and it never really even clicked that that's the kind of shrine that it was.
Yeah.
But it is. Like, it's unintentional. It's just, you know, this is the stuff that you love, but you're absolutely right. It's everywhere.
Yeah, and it really is one of those things that I really never thought about it either, where I was just like, hey, these are just things I like. Like, I have, and you know, there are some, there's like Lord of the Rings stuff, and there's some X-Men stuff over here. I mean, you know, it's not just that, but I mean, that is confidently feel like that's a solid 95 to 99% of stuff in my office that I have
yep.
displayed around. And so, I don't know. It's a sad thing. And I also feel bad for people listening, because not just because of this, but because last week I was on my own. And so it was like the 10-year anniversary of my friend Wade dying, and he's the one that got me into RPGs. So last week's episode was kind of somber too, where I like talked about like all the games we used to play and how he got me into RPGs and stuff. And so I didn't, and obviously that happened, you know, before the Akira Toriyama stuff. So I just had like no idea. So promise to be getting back to fun stuff soon. And I do have stuff. We asked on Twitter online for people who wanted to like share their like memories or like, you know, how he had an impact on them and stuff like that. But before we start reading some of those, so how did you get into Toriyama?
It was Dragon Ball Z. Well, the first originally, and had no idea, was playing the original Dragon Warrior on NES back when it was released through the Nintendo Power giveaway. Like, I played my friend Luke's copy of that, like, a ton.
Right, but the manual didn't have Toriyama art in it, so you were just kind of seeing, like, the pixelated, like, designs of his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember even looking at the manual for that thing. I just remember looking and killing slimes and doing all of that. Like, I remember us just playing the crap out of it, but I really have no, like, memory of checking out even the manual of it for what was in it. But Dragon Ball Z, when it came on Toonami in the U.S. in, what, 1997, 99, whenever it was. I guess it was 99 for me. I think I was 16, because that was when I got cable and when we had moved. So that was really my first introduction to him. And, like, I fell in love. Like, I went all in on it. Like, I still have my VHS import tapes of Dragon Ball Z for stuff that I couldn't get. I sing the song Gohan did to Piccolo-san, Ai Suki, all the time. Like, it's weird that that kind of thing is what stuck with me. But, like, I was one of that original set of millennials who found anime and Toriyama specifically through Dragon Ball Z being released on Cartoon Network in the afternoons when I got home from school. And I have loved it ever since.
Yeah, I think that's probably most of the people I feel like I know, like, in real life, not online, but like in real life. I feel like that's how they really got into it, was when Dragon Ball started showing up on Toonami. For me, let me paint you a picture of words.
Right.
I think that like my earliest memory is definitely when we were kids. We didn't have cable. But my grandmother did. And sometimes that we would finish school and we would ride a different bus to get to her house. And it was bus number 44. And there was a really, honestly, mean old lady named Glenda that drove the bus. But she was really nice to us because my grandmother sold her Avon. Anyway, there was a lot of kids on that bus, including Dale, our friend Dale Hobbs. Shout out to Dale.
Yeah.
Who were really into Dragon Ball Z on that bus. And that was really where, even before I can remember like seeing it on Toonami or anything, like that was the first time I can remember really seeing like Toriyama art and seeing all this Dragon Ball Z stuff, is because there were, for whatever reason, there was like the whatever grades it was, like fifth through ninth grade seats, because, you know, everybody on the bus is like seated by grade or whatever, is one of those buses. And
right.
So every one of them, that was their thing, is like, it felt like everybody in from the fifth through like ninth grade seats were like really into Dragon Ball Z. And this would have been probably like 19
makes sense.
1999, maybe? I can't really remember the year, but that's probably
about,
around...
Yeah, I remember specifically, yeah.
Yeah, probably around in there. And so I can remember, because we didn't ride the bus all the time, we didn't have assigned seats like everyone else. So whenever it was our turn to get on the bus, Glenda would just, like, put us somewhere, basically. And it was usually, you know, whatever kids were missing or whatever. So I can remember, like, sitting next to a guy whose name I cannot remember. And he had a bunch of Dragon Ball Z stuff. And he was, like, trading off. I don't know if it was a magazine, if it was manga, what it was. But he was, like, trading it off with the guy in the seat behind him. I do remember that guy. He was Wesley. Anyway, like, trading it off. And so that's kind of the first memory I had. And then my brother, I was never just, like, I don't know if it was because we didn't have cable or what, but I was never just, like, super into Dragon Ball back then. I fell in love with it through the manga, like, a whole lot later. But I really remember my brother Micah was really into Dragon Ball Z at the time. And so him and his friends had a lot of the stuff, and they had, like, the shirts that had, like, Goku on it and stuff. And like, I can remember Micah having a Goku shirt back then. And you know, we'd get off the bus when we did go to my grandmother's house, because she had cable. We'd get off the bus, and the timing was right, because that's when Toonami would be on. You would get off from the school bus, and Toonami was what was on at that time, so it was, like, perfect. And you would settle in and watch Toonami.
Yep, you would. You would sit there, and it would just be fantastic. You would watch them power up on the fights. You would have, you know, the internet was still, like, so new at that point for so many people who may not have even had it. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of community who online to be able to talk about it. So it was really awesome at that point, where basically everybody in person, like, everybody was watching this because it was what was happening at that point. It was great.
Yeah. I've thought about it kind of, like, retroactively and just in the last few days, like, what is it that drew me liking Toriyama stuff so much, and what has drawn so many people?
Yeah.
I think for me, really, it all goes back to why I love Dragon Quest so much, and why like Yuji Horii, why I like Toriyama, is all that, like, the sense of humor that it has. Like, Toriyama, one of my favorite things to do is in the, I don't know if they're in every edition, but I have, like, the uncensored, like, 3-in-1 volumes of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z that Viz put out, like, 10 yeah. years ago or so. And in the very back, they have, like, the Toriyama Says, or whatever they're called, the little, like, column at the end of every issue, where he that were printed, like, originally when the manga chapters were running live in Japan. And so they're collected at the end there. One of my favorite things to do in all of those is, like, read them, because he has, like, such a good sense of humor and just seems like the nicest guy. And it's really sad mm-hmm. now, because, like, you read them and there's stuff about, like, he writes about how him having a kid for the first time, and how he doesn't have so much time to draw anymore, but it's okay because he's helping with the baby. And there's like all of these things where you really get to see his life through that medium. Right. And he just such a great sense of humor, such a nice guy. And, you know, the stuff that he's created has a sense of humor to it. You know, you look at the slime and it has kind of, like, derpy eyes and that little smile, and it's, like, not the traditional enemy you would expect to see. And you read his manga, you play the game, the other games and designs that he's done. They're all very playful and humorous. Not to say that he didn't make, you know, some really intimidating looking monster designs, because he totally did. But I think it's that kind of, like,
oh yeah,
I think
for
it's the
sure.
sense of humor and everything that comes across, especially in those where it's just Toriyama. It's not even his work. It's just him talking about things and giving updates from his columns back in, you know, starting in the 80s. I really did. I always enjoyed reading those, like, and found them very humorous and liked them a lot. And I think that something that also kind of comes across to me, at least, is it felt like in all of those, you know, here's a guy that's writing, like, this very influential, incredibly popular manga. It's become an anime, it's blown up eventually over in the States and in other countries. It's a big hit in lots of Western countries now too, and all this, but, like, anytime you get to those columns and it's like, oh wow, you know, this is the age I would have been when Dragon Ball Z was so big, you know, in Tennessee, and in little backwoods Tennessee.
Right.
Then there's this guy who's creating it all, and like he never seems like he even like realizes it, like realizes how like impactful and awesome he is.
Yeah. He always seemed just really fun loving and humble. That just like, yeah, he did this stuff, and like helpful, like you said, just like a really positive point of light in the world.
I don't know. I think he had a lot of good qualities. Nice, funny, humble. And I really liked all those things about him. Before we go too much into this, I do want to kind of pause briefly to read some things, because we did get quite a few people just shared how they got into Toriyama, the impact he had on them, and other things. And so since we're celebrating Toriyama, we wanted everybody to get a chance to share their thoughts and things like that. I'm going to try to read a lot of these, most of them. If any came through after this episode, because we're recording this on like a Tuesday and this episode won't go up until Friday. So there may be people responding
right
between then that didn't make it in. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to try to read all these really quickly, because there's some really good. I've been reading these as they've come through, and there's some really good ones here. If I can get Twitter to work. Twitter's going to be down now. Just wait and see.
It's loaded up for me. So hopefully it'll load up for you. Twitter is doing okay. Yeah, I refuse to call it X. Like, it's, that's one of those things like I truly despise.
Yeah, I can't, it doesn't work for me. So I'll let you get started and I'll try to get Twitter working, because it's totally down for me.
Cool. Then, like one of the top ones that I really liked was, Chrono Katie, saying, I met my soon to be husband through him, asked an artist if he could make me some Chrono Trigger inspired art, and I fell in love with him. And I think that's just wonderful. Like, I think that kind of bringing people together is really what art and culture is about. And to see that firsthand, like, well, not firsthand, but I guess like knowing that this happened through fan art of Toriyama's, I think is just wonderful. And so, especially with being Chrono Trigger, because Chrono Trigger's fantastic, and I just love it. Liz says, I started to get into Dragon Quest once I heard rumors about there being representation of the series in Smash. I'd see trailers of DQ11S, and I love the character designs and art style of the game. Hobbyist observations. Brendan said, the moment I first watched DBZ in the midst of Cell games when I was in fifth grade, I was hooked. I was on board with anime for 4 straight years. Nowadays, I've gotten hooked into DQ largely because of his art, too. How can you not want to play a game with this cover art? It has a picture of the hero from, or the cover of the Super Famicom game with the hero Middenhall on it. Like, it's really cool. And then one of my other favorites was Neo at Neotendo. When I was a kid, my mom was given Dragon Quest VIII for PS2 and played it a lot. I would watch along and eventually start my own save file. I fell in love with the characters and monster designs, and I've since played every DQ game, including about 1,000 hours in Dragon Quest X, which I find phenomenal. And I love that one because that's what you and Naomi are doing.
Yeah.
That it's like y'all playing these games together, and so it just warms my heart to see stuff like that that brought families together. It's so great.
Yeah. And then we also have, now that mine's loading up, El Joe said, as with Goku and his gang, everything started with Dragon Ball. Like, I wasn't even sure about anime and manga, but I was introduced in all of this thanks to him. The anime was airing on Channel 7. The manga was due to a magazine reprinting the panels from the manga. It said that he was 4 when this happened, and it was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That's cool that he was able to get into that at such a young age. And then Imre Sumer said, I grew up watching Dragon Ball and Dr. Slump on Turkish TV. Those two series has a direct influence on my sense of humor now. Years past, Dragon Quest series and Chrono Trigger are my favorite games, favorite JRPG games. Akira Toriyama's work touched my life nearly for 30 years, which, again, is just incredible, because I think of the last, like, 4 we've read, I don't think any of these people live in the same country. Like, that is Like, it's hard to find somebody that has that much international appeal. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's very rare to have any one creator be so universally loved across basically every culture that they are a part of. It's just awesome. And it's because it's happy. I really think so much of it is because his art. I mean, and like you said, he can do scary, serious stuff too, but I think so much of it is because it's this vibrant, happy kind of style that brings people in and be like, oh, what's that? I want to see more of this. And then you realize that there's more depth to the stories that are behind it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like sometimes people use like pop art as like a derogatory term.
Right.
Especially nowadays. But I mean, that's what it is. I mean, by definition, it's popular. You know? It has mass appeal. Mm-hmm. It makes you happy. It makes you smile when you look at it. And I know that there's quite a few artists that responded to us as well. And then Danny Phantom said, it all started at 6 years old with my dad. We watched Dragon Ball all the time together. From then on, I bought the toys and I started talking about it with my friends on the playground. I made a lot of friends playing the games together, which is really nice.
Which is just awesome. And they also have, I've had this, their message on in the middle of my screen this whole time, watching, I think it's Gohan, maybe it's Gohu, but jumping up and down with Krillin. I'm not as familiar with...
It's Little Goku from Dragon Ball.
It's Little Goku, right? It's from the first Dragon Ball, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I just love watching this with their turtle shells on the back, like just leaping up in happiness. It's phenomenal. Like, I actually haven't watched or read very much of the original Dragon Ball. I've seen and read some of it, but that's one that is really a severe gap. I've watched and read a lot of DBZ, but not the original.
Like Dragon Ball, like just pure original Dragon Ball is my favorite. There's yeah. It's just so, it's silly and it's so charming and I like that. It's definitely my favorite. Speaking of people from other countries, here's some more. We have Terry Quest who said, I knew of Dragon Ball when it aired on German TV. I wasn't 100% mm-hmm. hooked to be honest, but I still watched it. My dad took me to the States to meet part of my family. I learned of DBZ. I think it used to run on Cartoon Network. I caught the end of the Frieza saga and was hooked immediately. And then Luke Maxwell said, I remember getting some DB videotapes from Spain when I was young. They didn't play it here. My knowledge of Dragon Ball and Z was based on seeing it on TV while on holiday. One day, we were allowed to bring a video into school, and I showed Dragon Ball to a confused teacher and my peers.
I love it. Like, that's the kind of thing that I love when I hear something. I was like, yeah, I wanted to show this to everybody, so I brought it to my teacher and had them show everybody. Like, that's so great.
Yeah. Chris 500 said DBZ is what got me into drawing. I drew Goku a lot as a kid. I would also bring DBZ movies to school to watch with my friends.
Man.
Worldler Ash said, in terms of designing and drawing monsters, Toriyama has influenced me in spades. The shapes, the colors, the expressions, and so much more have helped me understand more about character designs. Silver said, I never watched Dragon Ball as a kid, but in middle school I saw an ad for a little game called Dragon Quest IX. Toriyama's art style caught my attention. And the gameplay seemed similar to the game I was playing at the time, so that Christmas I decided to buy it on a whim. I became enthralled in all caps. Though I wasn't the best player, I loved the gameplay and the creative monster design. It quickly influenced my art style and my taste in gaming. It's kind of cheesy to say, but it changed my life. It even convinced me to check out DB Super, which I also loved.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of DB Super. I feel so bad with this that I'm like, man, I'm so behind. I do see people talking about it on Twitter a lot, though, so I feel like I've seen tons of clips of it.
Yeah. I started some of it. I'm trying to think of what it was. I started some of it, and I didn't get very far. It was one of those things where I was like, yeah, I'm just going to buy this up. I think I was waiting. I think what I did is I decided to wait and get it all as like a box collection because it's usually makes more financial sense to do it that way. Like, that's what I did with Dragon Ball Z is I just bought like the box set of all the Z manga.
Right.
Instead of buying it one at a time. But anyway, so as a lot of people got into it because of Dragon Ball, we're obviously a Dragon Quest podcast, so we talk about Toriyama and Dragon Quest a lot, but you have Sandland, which was mm-hmm. a good manga, and I'm very much looking forward to that game, which comes out in April. Then, of course, we had Chrono Trigger, which is your favorite video game of all time, or definitely like top
three. It's so good. It's right up there.
I guess if Chrono Trigger is your favorite video game of all time and Dragon Quest XI is now my favorite video game of all time, then, you know, Toriyama is the commonality there for for our favorite video games. Blue Dragon is another one of my favorites. Love that one. Really encourage anybody that has, like, I think it's on Game Pass, if you have Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
I think through there, or at least at one point, somebody told me it was. So lots of cool ways to check out these Toriyama games. I guess the last thing for me, I don't know what all else you want to say, but I guess the last thing for me is that another thing I kind of thought about on Friday was that they said he was still working on multiple projects. And so we have to assume some of that was Dragon Ball related. We know Sandland was coming out in April, so he's probably done with that one. But it's kind of like Dragon Quest XII is presumably going to be the last game that he and Sugiyama and Yuji Horii all worked on together. Don't even know how far. I mean, it was far enough in, you have to assume, since they have a logo and title and stuff like that, that it was far enough in that they at least both all contributed a little bit. But it was like DQ11 was kind of the last hurrah here, and like nobody even knew it at the time.
Yeah.
And it just really, I don't know, puts it into like a, I don't know, makes you contemplate your own mortality a little bit.
Yeah, which is something I don't like doing. It makes me uncomfortable. But yeah, I mean, really, it's going to be, I can't wait to see this stuff in Dragon Quest XII, knowing this and knowing that it's kind of one of the last things that he was working on and collaborating on. I look forward to seeing the other stuff too. And I didn't realize Sandland was coming out so soon. I thought it was later this year.
Yeah, April. I can't remember the exact date now. But yeah, it's coming out in April. It's very soon, like a month away.
Yeah, I'll be definitely checking it out.
Yeah, it looks good. People have not read the manga before, go read the manga. It's good. It's also, if you've ever seen, I see it shared around a lot on social media, but there's a panel from that about about Dragon Quest XIII coming out on the PlayStation 6, which may actually be kind of prophetic. The way things are going, I mean, PS6, probably getting that in 2028 is the current
estimate.
It does
seem like that would be a timeline for it.
Yeah, so that'll be kind of a funny thing when that turns out to be true, because it seems like it will turn out to be true. Assuming now that the series continues, I don't know. I mean, it's all really fresh right now. Yuji Horii is the only one left, and don't want to speak for him, but I could also see, like, if two of his friends are gone now, if it becomes, there's like that drive. I mean, I consider myself to be a creative person, so like, I get it. There's a drive to keep creating, but also it's like, I mean, if you died, it's like, I don't think I'd want to keep doing this podcast just to be a huge bummer right now.
I mean, really? Yeah, I wouldn't either. It's something where it'd be like, well, that is done. And I can totally understand if that were the case, that especially with both of them having passed away and it being such a collaborative thing for, you know, 35 years, that it's definitely going to, I think it may definitely impact at least the main line. I think that spinoffs and things like that might continue, but you're absolutely right that the mainline games could take a long hiatus or even a complete shift in direction and style.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think too, from a legal standpoint, I mean, the three of them owned it together, so it also has to go into who gets the estate and who has to okay it and stuff like that. So there's definitely some stuff to come of it, and it's one of those things where it's like, if Yuji Horii were to decide not to keep going with DQ, as a fan it would suck, but as a person I would understand.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good way of putting it, that I don't want it to happen, but it's one where I'm like, yep, That's how you handle it. That's what's happening.
Thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. If you have a story about Akira Toriyama that you would like to share, a memory, what have you, you can definitely do that over on Twitter and Blue Sky at Dragon Quest FM. You can do it here if you're listening to us on Spotify by replying to this episode. You can even email it to us at social@dragonquest.fm. Big thank you to you guys listening, and just a one final huge, huge thank you to Akira Toriyama for giving us so many great things that we all love and adore.
Yep. Can't say any better.
We'll see you guys next week.
Yep. Bye, y'all.